We're holding on page 26 in Vavakama Oislamid. We're in the middle of that. Rava asks Rava Bar Mori a bunch of things. Where do we have a source in Torah for such and such? The first one was in connection with, we said that when one person injures or harms somebody else, aside from he has to pay the various payments, he has to ask in Mechila, and we see that by Avraham and Avimelech in this week's parasha, and so then he asks, where do we see Hamispala Chaveru Hunen Etchila? We also see that from that story that Avraham davens for Avimelech and company to be able to give birth and to be able to, for things to come out of their bodies in the normal way, and Sarah, Vashem Pocket, Sarah Kasher Omar, we said Kasher Omar Avraham, as Avraham had said, Hashem answered him and his tefillah for himself and Sarah even before he answered Avimelech and company. So the Gemara had been going through that Rava asked Rava Bar Mori a bunch of similar things. Where do we have a source in Torah for such and such? So now continuing on that, Amalei Rava L'Rava Bar Mori, Menoham Milsa Da'amri Inchi. Where is a source in Torah for this that people say? And again, like we said, even people say it. It's not necessarily a Torah statement. It's just some common people say it, but still, there's a certain truth in it, and that truth has to be someplace in the Torah. So people say, Boskar Anya Azla Aniyusa. Poverty follows the poor. In other words, when you have a person who's poor, then usually more and more things tend to not go his way, and he becomes poorer and poorer, like. So Amalei, so he tells him, we have a Mishnah about that. Titznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Masech to Bikurim. When it comes to bringing the Bikurim, you have to bring them in some kind of container. The Pasuk says, V'santa batene. So, Ashirim mivim Bikurim, V'kalosis shol zahav v'shol kesef. Rich people would bring their Bikurim in kalosis, which is a type of basket or tray of something made out of silver or gold, made out of gold or silver. Aniyim, the poor people, the salamitzorim, shall arova klufa. They would bring it in baskets made out of peeled branches of arova. So they would take arova branches, peel them, so they look a little cleaner and nicer, and weave baskets out of them and bring their bikurim in that. And the mission continues. Asalim, rabbi kurim, nesunim, or noisnim lakoyanim. The baskets, along with the bikurim, are given to the koyanim. So we see, in other words, that here the rich person gets to keep his basket. But here the poor person, not only does he give his bikurim to the koyan, but he gives the basket as well. So like he becomes even poorer. So now there are indeed a number of reasons why that should be so. Marshall over here mentions a point that it means that if the basket is bottled to the Bikurim, then the Pasuk implies that it should be given with the Bikurim. The fact that the Pasuk uses the word tene rather than the usual word for a basket, which is sal, you actually have the word tene is only in two places in all of Tanakh, and both of them are in that week's parashah, three times actually, all of them are in that week's parashah. You have the tene in which you bring Bikurim, and then you have twice in the brochas. And in the Klolis, you have Baruch Tanacha or Mishartecha, and you have the opposite. But the fact that it uses this unusual word tene means that it's either a basket, either a keli that's important enough to be a chashivus of its own. Sal, in other words, would always imply like a cheap basket, says Marsha. Tene implies that it can be a more fancy kind of container. And in that case, then it's not bottled to the Bikurim, so therefore the Kurim is not going to take it. Whereas a basket made out of willow branches is cheap, and therefore the Kurim will take it with it. There's a number of explanations among the Mephoshim what the reason is behind that the poor person gives his basket. Tosfos Yom Tov on the Mishnah mentions a point that like this, it makes it a more chosh of a matana. Like this, a poor person may not be able to afford much bikurim. At Minat Torah, there's no minimum amount for bikurim. Midrabanan is 1/60th of your crop. But a poor person is going to have a much smaller, 1/60th of his crop is going to be a much smaller amount. So it's not, his matana is not going to be particularly important. So like this, by including the basket with it, it makes it more chosh of a matana. Actually, in Chelek Choftes, where the Rebbe runs down the various opinions and the various possibilities of how we understand this point, that the basket, in the case of a cheaper basket, goes with the Bikurim, the Rebbe talks about there are really four possible ways to understand it, that you give the Bikurim, and in addition you need to give the basket, that the basket becomes part of the Bikurim, that giving the Bikurim triggers the Chiyuk to give the basket, etc., and then the Rebbe derives from it a Hora, that a person's guf is like the basket, and he's offering not only the Bikurim, He may be poor. He's not on the level he should be in Avodah, but he offers his basket becomes part of the Bikurim as well. Anyway, the point is, again, Rabbi Bar-Mori says, so there you have a hint to this idea, Bosso Anya, Aslani Yusuf, poverty follows the poor, where here this poor guy is barely able to afford Bikurim, and now he has to give away the basket as well. Omalei, so Rava says to him, At Amit Mehalsam, so you're telling me that concept based on a Mishnah. I can actually bring you a posik in Chumash that expresses this idea. But Pashtus said, I mean, why is Rava asking the question if he himself knows an answer? But Pashtus, he wanted to see if Rabbi Bar-Mori has a better one. Anyway, the posik says about a mitzvah, the Tomei, Tomei Yikra. The Tomei has to call out Tomei. So in other words, so what's the point? Rashi explains, here he's Tomei, poor guy, he's miserable and he's suffering from tzaras, and now on top of that, he has to shame himself publicly by calling out, I'm Tomei. So therefore, that also expresses this point of Bosa Anya Azlan Yusa. Marshall says another explanation of it would be, the Gemara in a few places explains that from the Pasuk, the Tomei Tomei Yikra, we learn the concept of Tsiun Kvaris, that if a person has a caver on his property, he's expected to mark it. We talked about a few days ago in connection with if a person has a field that has Tuma in it and he's doing Shemitah and everybody can come into the field, he has to mark it so people don't come in there and accidentally become Tomei. So you have those basic concept that Kvarim have to be marked. And we learn that also from the Tomei, Tomei Yikra, the Tomei itself should call out Tomei. You should see a visible thing, see the plaster on it, and know to stay away. Now, therefore, what it means is that here the guy not only has something Tomei over there, but he has to now spend money to buy plaster to make the simen. So it's another idea of this Bosso Anya Aslan Yusa. And then there are a couple of other explanations of what the point is. Okay. Another one, Amalei Rava L'Rava Bar-Mori, Menoha Milsa De Amar Rabbanon, where is there a source in Torah for this that the Chachamim said? Now, till now, we had things that the Da'amri Inshi, that regular people, Sam the man on the street, says. Now we have something, an expression that the Chachamim tell us. We actually find that Rabbi Akiva says this to his son as one of his instructions to his son. So he says, Hashkin ve'echol v'kayetz b'pnei achama, wake up early in the summertime and eat breakfast early, so you don't get harmed by the sun, or v'chordef b'pnei atzina, and in the winter so you don't get harmed by the cold. So that's an expression of the Chachamim that it's important to have a good breakfast because it protects you from the effect of the heat and the cold. And v'amri inchi, and there's a popular expression that goes with this as well. People say, shitin ruhuti rahut. 60 runners ran, v'lemotu l'gabra the mitzafra korich, and they still couldn't catch up to the person who ate breakfast in the morning. Korich literally means whacked, because in those times that's how generally they would eat. They had their bread was like pitas or laffas or something like that, and they would wrap it around the food. Anyway, the point is the same idea. In other words, a person eats breakfast, then 60 runners can't catch up to him. Why 60? Tosfos brings an explanation because you have, in a certain sense, there are six seasons in a year. We usually think of four seasons, but you have the Pasuk in Parshas Noach that mentions six seasons, Zerah, Vakotsu, Vakor, Vachorim, etc. The Gemara in Bava Metzia explains how they're distributed throughout the year. So therefore, the idea would be every season is 60 days approximately, and therefore it means that if a person is eating breakfast every one of those 60 days, then all these runners can't catch up to him. Tosfos says you don't really need that. We find a lot of times in the Gemara it uses 60 to just mean a large number. So the point is that we have the expression of Chazal about how important it is to eat breakfast, and we have an expression of the common people that also say how much it strengthens a person that he can outrun a whole bunch of other people. So where is there a source in Torah for it? So Dichtiv, or Omalei Dichtiv, so Rabbi Bar-Mori answers him with a pasuk from Yeshayahu. Lo yirovu v'lo yitzmo, they will not be hungry and they will not be thirsty. And Parshat Chap, this is talking about the Jews who are coming back from Golos and then going through the deserts and whatnot and on their way to Eretz Yisrael. So they won't be hungry or thirsty. V'lo yakim shorav v'shemesh, and the heat or the sun will not strike them. They won't get sunstroke or heat stroke or whatever. So we see, in other words, we douse in the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, in other words, they won't be affected by any of the potential dangers on the way. They won't run out of food or water and they won't be harmed by the beating down sun in the desert. But now, Rabbi Bar-Mori is explaining, we can also darish in the Pasuk, lo yirovu v'lo yitzmo, they won't be hungry and they won't be thirsty, because they ate breakfast in the morning, and therefore, v'lo yakim shorav v'shemesh, therefore they're not affected by the heat or by the sun. This Gemara is also in Bava Metzia. Marsha points out over there, wait a minute, so you have the heat over there, where's the cold? And he says, because I'm in the wintertime when a sunny day, you have the sun shines early in the morning and it's cold. You often find, actually, that Dafka during the wintertime, a clear day is usually colder. When it's cloudy, it's usually a little warmer. So the Shemesh over here actually refers to the cold winter mornings when it's sunny. Anyway, so you see from this pasuk, says Rav Bamori, you see this idea of eating and drinking and therefore not being affected by the heat and the cold. Omale, so again, Rava tells him, At Amit Mehosan, you're telling me based on that pasuk, but no, I mean a mehocha. I can find a better pasuk, a pasuk in Chumash. Where again, it's always better because like a midi, the letter mizi, but I said everything is always merumas in Torah and specifically in Chumash or Chumash Torah. Pasuk says, Va'avadtem es Hashem alekechem, you will serve Hashem your God, and the Gemara interjects, Zu Kriyishma utfila, that refers to serving Hashem by saying Kriyishma and davening. In other places it mentions that Avodah Shebelev is tfila specifically. Then the pasuk continues, Uveirachas lach mecha vesmei mecha, he will bless your bread and your water. And that means, the Gemara interjects, that means, Zupas Mamelach the Kitin Shomayim, that refers to a person eats bread together with salt and drinks water. The salt, Meforshim point out, is not strictly necessary. It's only if the bread was made without salt. Really, by the way, the same thing applies as far as when we break bread for Hamotzi as well. Technically, I mean, we have a minute to dip it in salt. But really, strictly speaking, that's only necessary, Alpi Halacha, only if the bread wasn't made with salt. If it was, then there's still Kabbalistic reasons to dip it. But anyway, so the same thing over here. The Pas V'melach means if the bread was not otherwise made with salt. As far as the Kitin Shamayim, Rashi mentions, again, in Bav Metzia, where this Gemara is also, he says that it means if the person doesn't have wine, then he'll drink water. If he drinks wine, that would be even better for him, actually. Be that as it may, it mentions that he'll eat past the Melach the Kitin Shamayim, Mikan Ve'elach, and then after that, as the pasuk finishes off, V'asiroisi Machlo Mikirbecha. Hashem says, I will remove sickness from your midst. So you see, says Rava, the same idea that breakfast helps a person overcome a lot of potential sicknesses. Like this, he could become sick from the heat or the cold, and he wouldn't be able to keep up with the runners, but now as a result of eating the Pas V'melach, the Kitin Shamayim, now he's able to. The Tanya, and furthermore, we learn in a Braisa, Machla Zumora, when the pasuk says Vasilesi Machla Mikirbecha, the word Machla in this pasuk, which means sickness, also specifically refers to the Mora, to the gallbladder. The gallbladder, it's, you know, you have the liver produces a digestive juice called bile. If there's an overflow of it, it stores it in the gallbladder. And now, if that gets into the rest of the body, then it causes all kinds of diseases and problems and things. So the Gemara says, V'lama nikra shma machla, why is the gallbladder called machla? Sheshmonu m'shloisha chaloyim yeshba. Because there are 83 sicknesses that depend on it. There are 83 sicknesses in the body that can be caused by an excess of this digestive juice and it getting into other parts of the body. Machla, gematria hochi havel, because the word machla is gematria 83. So 83 illnesses. The kulon, past mamelach shachris, the kitten shamayim vataltan, all of them can be taken away. All of them, a person becomes immune to them, or at least more immune to them, by eating bread with salt in the morning and drinking a pitcher of water. So again, there's this idea that eating a good breakfast helps protect a person against a wide variety of problems and illnesses. There's a number of places in Chassidus where it talks about deeper ideas behind this. First of all, Machla Zumara, there's a few places where it talks about that specifically this refers to Klipas Noiga. Machla, because first of all, the word machla actually has a double meaning. It means sickness, Malashon Choli, but it also comes from an Aramaic word that means sweet. Which that's what Klipas Noiga is. It's a sickness that has a sweetness within it. And then the idea is when we say that Pas Shachus, the Kitin Shamelach, Mevataltan, that refers in particular to it refers to learning Torah, and specifically it refers to learning Torah Sachsidus, which is compared to salt in a number of places, in that it preserves a person's learning. So when he learns Torah, and especially when he learns Torah Sachsidus, then that helps that counteracts the Machla Zumara, and therefore makes him healthier Beruchnius and also Begashnius. There was once that Eber once talked about also an interesting point. Another place where the number 83 comes up in Jewish life is the number of sections of halachas in the Rambam. In Yad HaChazak, you have 14 Sfarim, you have it divided into 83 sections of halachas. So that Eber once talked about the idea that...
Wait, 83 sections of halachas, what is that?
83, in meaning, in other words, so like this, you have, for example, Sefer Amada, and within that, you have Hilchas Yisod Torah, and Hilchas Talmud Torah, and Hilchas Avodah Zarah, and Hilchas Tshuva, and so forth. When you break it down, the sections of halachas in the Rambam, Hilchas this, Hilchas that, you have 83 of them altogether. So the Rebbe once pointed out then that the Rambam, the great doctor, as we know, that was his profession, he wrote us a so to speak, a prescription against the 83 machlos that we're talking about over here. The Rebbe even once talked about the idea, you know, we talk about in various places in Shas, then and in Midrashim, the idea that Tzaddikim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Malash Nesein, Miyoyim Liyoyim, Hashem fills up their days so that they live an exact number of years. We know, we see that the Golory with the Mitzvah of the Rebbe, he was born and passed away on Tes Kislev. The Rebbe once talked about that we don't see it, the Golory, by most Tzaddikim, the concept exists with Nimi Senyon, but we don't see it necessarily coming down like that in this world. But then the Rebbe once commented in a Sicha that you see with the Rambam, he was born Erev Pesach, he passed away Chof Tamis. The number of days between those two dates in a regular year is 83. So it means, in other words, he lived to 70 years, less exactly 83 days, meaning that the 83 sections in Mishneh Torah, in effect, make up for that, so that you can say by him also it was Mamalash Nesein Liyon Liyon. Here's another one. Here we have a different girsa. We'll talk about in a second why the different girsa is. So the Amri Inshi again would be just a popular expression. The Omer Rabbanon means that the Chachamim say it. So the expression is Chavrach Kauya Chamra. If your friend calls you a donkey, don't be insulted and say and try to argue back and say I'm not a donkey. Ukfal gabich mush. Then go ahead, put a saddle on your back. In other words, accept the criticism. Fine, I'm a donkey. Then you're right. A donkey should be wearing a saddle. In other words, the point of the expression is accept the criticism gracefully and don't try to argue against it. So where do we see that? Omalei, so he answers, Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in last week's parasha when Hogar runs away from Sarah. So the Mamalach comes and appears to her, Vayoymar, and he says, Hogar shivcha Sarai v'gomer, Hogar made servant of Sarai, where you're from and where you're going. Vatoymer, and she answers, Mipnei Sarai gvirti v'gomer, I'm running away from Sarai, my mistress. Now that means, in other words, so like this, she's trying to run away. She's trying to make herself independent. But she's trying to make herself independent. But when the Malach says to her, you know, after all, you are Sarai's maidservant, then she like kind of admits to it, you know what, you're right. Sarai is my mistress, after all. So therefore, so you see, in effect, it's like the Malach is telling her, you're a donkey. And like, so to speak, she says, you know what, you're right. I'll put back on the saddle. Even Yaakov points out that specifically, you know, Avodim are compared to Chamorim, Amadurim al Chamor. Therefore, it's very appropriate that the popular expression uses a Chamor, and here the example from Chumash involves a Shivcha. So Marsha explains the vote is that the next piece of Gemara is going to mention a similar concept, but there you're talking about where the person knows that it's true. Here it's the person, as far as he's concerned, it's not true. As far as Hogar is concerned, before the Malach starts talking to her, Sarai is not her mistress anymore. I'm running away from her. I'm independent now. But when the Malach tells her, you know what, the fact is, you still are Shifcha Sarai, then she admits. So therefore, that's like over here, we're saying that the person, I didn't consider myself a donkey until now, but you're telling me a criticism that I am. You know what, fine, I'll accept it. So therefore, that's why Marsha says, the Girsa de Omer Rabbanon might be better. The Amri Inshi would suggest that this is a popular proverb, meaning everybody should act that way. You can't expect everybody to act that way. Most people, mainly you give them justified criticism. Okay, they should accept it. That's the next piece. But you give them something that they consider as unjustified, that they don't think they deserve to be called that way. Is a normal person going to react and say, you know what, you're right? It's hard. It's a midas chassidus. Therefore, better to say it's da'omu rabbonim. The Chachamim tell us that this is an appropriate midas chassidus to act that way.
But that was a malach, that was mochiach, not a busab adam.
Well, there was that, but it was a malach, that's true, right? But actually, yeah, that you mentioned that's Mina Shemayim, Anaf Yosef brings just that point from the Vilna Gaon. We find that we find when Shimi is cursing out David, then David says, leave him be, ki Hashem omalei kalel. The Alter Rebbe talks about it in Geras Chofei, we had in Tanya a week or two back, everything is Minah Shemayim, and therefore, so if a person Taka sees, people are calling him a donkey, people are calling him names, he should realize, Taka, you know, there's a reason why Hashem is making that happen to me, and instead of fighting against it, you know what, I should go and roll with it.
Commanded Shlomo
Melech to curse. Shlomo Melech, after all, the guy's a murdered B'malchus to see to it that you arrange things in such a way that will show that he's an open murdered B'malchus.
Curse first of all, comfort that in terms of...
Well, it's more than he realizes. The fact is, Shimmy is a dangerous character. The fact that he did this before might mean he's prone to start a rebellion again. So fine, but he's not telling Shlomo to kill him just without excuse. I promise that I'm not going to kill him. However, you, being a smart guy, Shlomo, you will figure out a way for him to show his true colors, that he's still a murdered Malchus, that he still won't follow instructions, and then already you'll have reasons here. So I'm not the Yosef saying that the verdict is like this. If people call him a donkey, look, maybe it is Minashamayim that he should be treated like a donkey. So if he himself puts on the saddle, good, then he gets rid of that. Now he doesn't need that judgment Minashamayim anymore. Now he's Yosef, basically. Okay. Here's another one. Where is there a source in Torah for the popular expression milsa de miganya de isbach, when there's something degrading about you, about yourself, kodim omra, then go proactively say it. Don't wait for somebody else to bring it up. You mention that point first before anybody else does. And here, Marshall is saying, this we're talking about where he knows that it is true. Again, the previous one with the calling him a donkey, as far as he's concerned, it's not true. But he himself knows that it's true, then he should go ahead and say it before other people bring it up against him. So he answers, Dichtiv, you have in next week's parasha, Vayomar, when Eliezer is sitting by the table over there with Rivka and her family, and then he starts his speech, Vayomar, and he says, Eved Avraham Anoichi, I am a slave of Avraham. So like the first thing, he's giving out the information. They might have thought that he's Avraham himself or something, but now the first thing he does is give out the information about the fact that he's only an Eved. So that bears out this expression that a person should do that rather than waiting for somebody else to find it out and then throw it up against him.
It's a shvach
that he's an Eved also, but I mean we find with Hagar that it was a Gnai, but yeah. So there's a couple of different ways of looking at the difference between this and the previous one. You have Marsha's point. And Naf Yosef has a long explanation over here to the effect that Hagar really thought herself to be completely emancipated, but no, because Sarah had basically said, you're emancipated only insofar as you can marry Avraham and be considered as a wife of his, but otherwise, if you're not a wife of Avraham anymore, then you go back to being a slave woman, and she didn't realize that, and the Malach has to tell her that. As opposed to here, Eliezer knows all along that he is, in fact, an Eben. Next. Here's another one. The goose walks along with his head held low, that he know him the taifi, but his eyes are looking up and looking ahead. So in other words, the idea the it's taken from you look at a goose or similar birds like that. They walk around, they look like they're just looking down up there at the ground to see whatever they can find as they're walking by. But meanwhile they also have their eyes are like not just looking down, their eyes are meanwhile constantly looking ahead, a little upward and ahead to see what opportunities, what food or whatever there is further along. So they use it as an expression, like a person makes he may be an onav, and he doesn't really want to ask for things himself, but he should be looking for opportunities. He should be on the lookout for opportunities when he finds he has a chance to learn Torah, he has a chance for a certain parnasa, he has a chance to collect a debt or whatever. He should be constantly like the goose, not just looking at the floor in front of him, but also looking up ahead at what opportunities are available and be prepared to take advantage of them. So where's an example in the Torah of that kind of thing? So he answers him, Dichtiv, you have a pasuk. Now you have the story in Sefer Shmuel involving David and Nabal and Abigail. To make a long story short, Nabal was a rich guy in the area where David and his men were. It was before Nabal was going to be making a big feast. David sends some of his men to ask Nabal to share some of their food with him and his men. And he says, we were helping your shepherds throughout last summer, etc., etc. To make a long story short, Nabal was a cheap guy, and he insults David's messengers and says, absolutely not, I'm not giving any of my food away to some strangers from nowhere. David is extremely insulted. He also considers Nabal to be a murdered b'malchus, because by this time David had already been anointed by Shmuel, and he takes his men and they decide they're going to go and fight against Nabal and his household and wipe them all out. Abigail, Nabal's wife, hears about what happened. She takes some provisions, loads them up on some donkeys, and goes to meet David, and she gives David a whole speech The main point of the speech was that David should not go and revenge himself against Nabal. He should realize, leave the revenge to the Eibishter. He'll deal with him, and you don't start out your kingship with something like that, where you're just gonna look like you're you're some kind of gangster going and beating up and killing anybody who goes against you. And she tells him also, la halacha, you're not really considered the king yet because the people haven't accepted you as king. B'chola, it's a long speech with a lot of important points in it. And finally, David relents and says, you know what, fine, you're right. I hear what you're saying, and I'm not going to harm Nabal. I'm going to leave it up to the Eibishter. Now, in the course of her speech, she says, the hate of Hashem la'adoni, she says, Hashem will do good to my master, meaning to you, David, v'zacharta samasecha, and you should remember your maidservant. Now, by that, she meant to hint to him that when her husband Nabal is dead, and she fully expects that he will be, because the Eibishter is going to punish him for the way he acted, then she's hinting to David, I want you to marry me. She was a tzaddikus, after all. She's one of the seven Nevi'ahs, even. So she, we don't know how it is that she got married to a lowlife like Nabal in the first place. Maybe he was a good guy when he first married her, who knows? But whatever the case, so now, like the goose in the mushel, or like the person in the nimshel, she's on the lookout for opportunities. So now she's hinting to David that there's this opportunity, and if it should come, and if it should happen, then I'm putting in my claim right now. So we see a source in Torah for acting this way. Ion Yaakov points out, actually, that there's a medrash that says on it that Avigail was wrong for doing that. Throughout the whole story, it calls her Avigail, where the last three letters, Gimel Yud Lamed. After that, right after that speech of hers, right after she says that's the end of those words, at the end of her speech, then the next thing after that, the pasuk calls her Avigail. And Chazal said, and there's Medrash, where Chazal said that like she temporarily lost a yud from her name, because how could she do that? She's an Eishes Ish. Look, you know, Nabal, no matter what a low-life Nabal is, she's still married to him. How can she be hinting to anybody else that I want you to marry me afterwards? So therefore, so because of that, the Medrash says she forfeited a yud from her name. But Iyun Yaakov says, or Gemara, apparently disagrees with that. The fact that we see that Amri Inshi, that this is a popular expression, and that we have a source for it in Torah, means, is as much as to say, that she didn't do anything wrong.
Isn't there a Gemara somewhere that says woman's eyes are always on the next opportunity?
I'm not familiar with that. Adarabba, you have a Gemara that says that a woman would rather be married even to the most contemptible person rather than be alone. So yeah. Okay. Fine. Another one. Omale Rovel Rava Mamori. Menoham Milsi Da'amri Inchi, the popular expression that people say, where's a source for it in Torah. Shitin Tachli Matsuha, 60 bereavements, meaning 60 sadnesses, and Rashi translates Tachli as Avelos Machoibus. 60 mournings and 60 pains. Again, it doesn't mean 60 specifically, it just means a large number of mourning and pain. Matyuha is going to come lekocha to a tooth to call chavrei shama that hears the sound of its fellow tooth veloy ochal and didn't eat. So in other words, the mushel is like you have a person's teeth, and some of them get to enjoy the food and the others don't. So like it pains the other ones. The nimshel of it is, in other words, that people see that other people are enjoying something, are enjoying some kind of good thing, and they don't get to participate, then it makes them feel even worse. So where is there a source in Torah for that? Amalei dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Malachim. So at the beginning of Malachim, it tells the whole story of how David is old and weak, and Adoniyahu, his oldest surviving son, decides that he has a chance to seize the kingship for himself. Most of the story is in Haftarah of Chayasara. Nosan Anovi gets wind of what's going on, and he tells Bathsheba, you go and tell David what's going on, and then I'll come and back up what you're saying, and David, because after all, your son Shlomo is supposed to be the next king, and they go and tell David one after the other, and David right away starts giving out orders that they should anoint and crown Shlomo right away. So now, when Nosan is talking about what's going now, so the pasuk describes when Adoniyahu made his party in honor of that he planned, he's expecting to be coronated, the pasuk mentions who he invited and who he didn't invite. He invited people who he figured are going to help him. They're powerful people who will help him be king, and that David and that don't like David for one reason or another. So, for example, he invited Yoav, the general. Yoav had been David's general for many years, but there were a number of times when Yoav had done things that David disapproved of, and Yoav knew that after Shlomo's gone, he's also going to be out of a job and maybe even worse. So therefore, he went along with Adoniyahu, and there were a couple of others as well. But on the other hand, the pasuk says Adoniyahu did not invite to his party various people that he knew were going to be on Shlomo's side, including Shlomo himself, but also including Nathan HaNavi. So when Nathan HaNavi comes and reports to David what's going on, he says, "V'li ani avdecha, as far as me, your servant, all the Sadiq HaKoyin and Sadiq HaKoyin Gadol, all the Benayahu ben Yehoyada, and Benayahu ben Yehoyada, who at that point was one of David's top men." We learned about him a few days ago, that he wrestled a spear out of a mitzvah, out of a huge mitzvah's hand, and killed him. So he was one of David's elite officers. Later on, he became Shlomo's general. Anyway, with the Shlomo Avdecha and Shlomo, your servant, like Kara, Adoniyahu didn't invite any of them. In other words, the point Nosson is, or the simple meaning is, the point that Nosson is making is the fact that he didn't invite any of those people shows that he's not just making a party stam, it means he's making a party because he wants to seize the kingship, and therefore he's dafka not inviting the people who he knows are going to be opposed to that. But the point is, why is he mentioning v'li ani avdecha, that I myself, loy kore, he didn't invite? It makes it sound like he's complaining that I didn't, all those great people were invited, and I didn't even get an invitation. So therefore, so that's a source in the pasuk for this idea, like he feels bad, how is it that everybody else got invited and I didn't get invited? Obviously, he's not doing that out of selfishness. He's telling it because he needs to tell David to take care of the matter right away and get Shlomo appointed as king. But nevertheless, the way he phrases it makes it sound like his main complaint is everybody else got invited and I didn't. A couple of other explanations that Mefarshim point out over here. For one thing, the main thing is about Shlomo. So why is he mentioning Shlomo first? He should first be mentioning among the ones who weren't invited. He didn't invite Shlomo, and he didn't invite Tzadik HaKoyin, and he didn't invite me. Why is he putting himself first? It's mashma like he has, besides the fact that there's a major political thing going on over here that has to be dealt with, there's also a personal complaint over here that he didn't invite me. Anaf Yosef brings another vort as well, that brings from Kli Yoker on Nevi'im, it's also the fact that he says, V'li ani avdecha. That word, and what does he need to say the word ani? V'li avdecha. It means the word ani is actually Meloshon aninus, like mourning. Like I'm in mourning, V'li and me, ani in mourning, avdecha. Your servant is in mourning because I wasn't invited. So there's a source in the pasuk for this idea. Again, Omalei, so Robert tells him, At Amit Mehosam, you're telling me based on a pasuk in Nevi'im, but no, I'm in a mehocha, I can bring you a pasuk in Chumash that expresses the same point, that a person feels bad when he's not participating in something good that other people are participating in. Pasuk says, when Yitzchak gets married to Rivka, Vayivier Yitzchak Oyla Sora Imai, he brought her into the tent of his mother Sora, Vayikachas Rivka Vati Loyla Isha Vayaver, he took Rivka and she became his wife and he loved her, Vayinochem Yitzchak Achreimai, and then Yitzchak is finally comforted after his mother's passing, Uchtid Basu, and what's the very next passage? By Yosef Avraham, by Yikach Isho Shmok Torah. That Avraham went and remarried and married Torah. Whether Torah is Hagar, whether she's somebody else, different opinions. But the point is, in other words, we're meant to understand, says Rava, the pasuk is hinting, once Yitzchak is happily married, then Avraham starts feeling bad. Well, why aren't I married also? Sarah passed away 3 years ago. You know what? It's time for me to get married again as well. So therefore, so, in other words, if not, then he's like feeling bad, so it bears out this expression about the teeth, about one person feeling bad because of the good that somebody else is having. Marsha points out that the fact that it says by Yosef also, it's not just that the two psukim are back to back. The fact that it says by Yosef, it means that it was a hosofa, vav Moisef al inyan rishon, that because Yitzchak married Rivka, that caused that Avraham should marry another wife, should marry Keturah, and if it hadn't been for that, then he might not have bothered. Ian Yaakov also points out, you could also say, so what would Rava Bar Mori answer to that? Why doesn't he like using that pasuk as a source? He says, because after all, you could say there's another reason Avraham remarried. He hadn't had a daughter yet. You have the opinion that he had a daughter named Bakol, but not everybody agrees to that. So therefore, so he only had sons. He has to do the mitzvah, period, Barivia. That alone might be a reason for him to remarry. That doesn't necessarily show that he's doing it because Yitzchak had just gotten married and, like, so to speak, he feels a little jealous. Another one. Amalei Rava LaRabba Mori. Minaha Milsa Damri Inchi. Where is there a source in Torah for the popular expression? Hamra de Mori Bekivusa Lashaki. The wine is of its owner, and the goodness is to the one who serves it. So that, there's two explanations. Rashi and Tosfos have different explanations what that expression means. Rashi explains like this. When you, for example, at a king's banquet, who does the wine belong to? The king. But then when it's the waiters who are serving it, who do you say thank you to? To the waiters. So therefore, it's like the ones who are serving are the ones who get the credit, not the ones who actually own it. That's the point of Rashi. Tosfos gives a different explanation that it means the wine belongs to the owner, but the waiters, the ones who are serving it, are the ones who actually get to decide on the spot who should get more and who should get less. They have their people by the party that they like, whether because they tip them, whether because they know them from before, whatever, and they give them extra. So like even though, so according to that, in other words, even though it should be, you would think it would be up to the king himself or the host himself to decide who gets more and who gets less, in practice it's left up to the waiter's discretion. So where do we see a source in Torah for that? Because you have a pasuk in Chumash, the Samachta es Yodcha Olav, Hashem tells Moshe, you should lean your hand on Yoshua to give him smicha and appoint him as your successor. Laman Yishmu V'yiru, it doesn't say in the pasuk V'yiru, Laman Yishmu Kaladas Bnei Yisrael, so that all the Jewish people should hear that he's your successor. But then the pasuk says, "V'Yeshua ben Nun mole ruach chachma." Yeshua ben Nun was full of a spirit of chachma. Ki samach Moshe es yodav olav, because Moshe had rested his hands on him in plural. V'Yishmoel ben Yisrael, again, when the Jewish people therefore listened to him. So according to Rashi, the point is that here the pasuk is making it sound as though it was Moshe's initiative. What do you mean? What do you mean? Ki samach Moshe es yodav olav. Ki Hashem omala Moshe lisnach es yodav olav, or something to that effect. The fact that it just attributes it in Parshas Vezeis HaBracha, as if it was Moshe's own idea, this bears out this idea that even though the instructions to do it came from Hashem, we give the credit to Moshe because it happened through him. According to Tosfos' explanation, the vote is that Hashem told him only the samachta es yodcha, lean your hand on him in the singular. And meanwhile, Moshe did. He samach Moshe as yodav olav. He was more generous, and he put both his hands on him and gave him a double amount of chokhmah. So therefore, that would bear out the meaning of the expression according to Tosfos, that it's the waiter, so to speak, it's the go-between. In this case, Moshe Rabbeinu, who gets to decide how much hashpa is going to be given to the mekabel, and in this case, Yeshua. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Yud Gimel Cheshvan. The Rebbe discusses in a sicha, how is it possible that it's specifically our orphan generation that should be zoicha to Gola? So first of all, we have the well-known mushal in Sifrei Moser about the midget standing on the giant's shoulder, where you can see further than the giant. So the earlier generations were giants relative to them, were midgets, but nevertheless our avoda comes after their avoda, and therefore that will be what brings the gola. There's a sicha where the Rebbe once talked about that in connection with Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah and Kaven Shivim Shana, why it's brought in Sfarim, why Taka did he end up looking like he was 70, because he was a Gilgal of Shmuel HaNovi, who lived to 52, he himself was 18 at the time of the story, 52 plus 18 is 70. So we see, in other words, he brought along into his current life, he brought in the accomplishments of his previous Gilgal Shmuel, the 52 years of Avodah that Shmuel had accomplished, and therefore he's able to look like 70. In the same way, we bring along with us all the Avodah and all the accomplishments of the previous generations.
But negative things in the previous Gilgal?
So negative things, no, because negativity is basically, it's an absence of Kedusha. It's not a Metzius of its own, so that disappears after a while, but the good never disappears. Starting Simon Beis in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch and in Madur Abastra, this is Din Lavishas B'Godim. The halacha has to do with getting dressed in the morning. Now, the Torah in many places praises the midah of tznius, that a person has to be modest as far as, and in many different ways as far as his actions, like not to be a show off and whatever. But it also means poshut, not to show off his body. The Chum explained that every person has to do that, to be tsanua in all of his ways, not to act in a pritzistic, a shameful way. And that means not even when he's in front of other people, even when he's by himself. So the Alter Rebbe refers to, he'll explain in Hilchos Tznius, which is the halachas of having relations, those we don't have in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, that part of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch that hasn't reached us, but in the big Shulchan Aruch and in Mishnah Berurah and whatever, you can find all the relevant dinim in Urach Chaim, Simon Mem. But there also you have the point that even a couple is having relations, they have to do it in a tzniistic way. I once read, by the way, an interesting thing in this connection. Back some 60 or so years ago, the sociologists wanted to do a survey to estimate how many frum Jews are there in America. How many Shomer Torah mitzvahs? The question is, what are you going to gauge by? What mitzvah are you going to use as an index whether a person is frum or not? So I read that first they figured they'll use Shemitah Shabbos. It's a very obvious touchstone of whether a person is a frum Yid or not. Then they decided, you know what, the better thing to do is to survey the couples and ask which ones are careful with Taras and Mishpacha. Why? Because they realized like this. A couple that's not committed to Yiddishkeit and that doesn't care enough and that doesn't at least openly care enough about the Eidishta, they would say, what do you mean? This is a private thing between myself and my wife. How dare anybody else interfere with it? Whereas a couple that has Yiras Shemaim, a couple that's frum and committed to mitzvahs, would say, on the contrary, in that most private area of my life, how could I not have guidance of Hashem there when I have guidance from Hashem everywhere else? Anyway, so here this expresses this idea that a person has to act in a tzniistic way even when he's in his own bedroom. So even when if he's all alone, even if he's in the most private room, then a person has to act in a tzniyasdika and bushadika way, a way of showing a feeling of shame before the Eidishtik. Because after all, Maloy Kolarev Tavoide, and you can't even say he's in a dark room and nobody sees me because the Eidishtik can see him in the dark just as much as the light. So therefore, so practical things from that, therefore the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, parts of his body that are covered, he shouldn't uncover even a little bit. The parts that are always covered with clothing, even when he's sleeping, he should cover himself completely with a blanket. Even when he's going into the bathroom, then is in the next simon, it's going to talk about that there's certain amounts, obviously, a person has to uncover parts of his body to go to the bathroom, but even then, there are certain amounts that Chazal said, and not any more than that. So the idea is, in other words, to always be acting in a way, realizing that the Eibishter is always watching him, and therefore to act in that proper way. Then, for that matter, he goes on to say, even if a person is going, now this is talking about if a person, for example, is going to sleep in pajamas or whatever, what about if a person is not going to sleep with clothes, and many people talk to sleep without clothes, then what he should do is that he'll undress in bed, cover himself with a sheet or a blanket, and then take off the appropriate, and then take off the various parts of clothing. So that way, when it gets uncovered from the clothing, then it's covered by the sheet, and that way not even a little bit is uncovered unnecessarily. Similarly, the Alter Rebbe says, if a person is just taking off his socks, same thing, he should cover his feet first and then take his socks off under the blanket. He gets up, then this idea would be the same thing. He gets dressed under the blanket, and that way nothing is uncovered even any more than necessary. And similarly, when he puts on socks, because after all, around here, the Alter Rebbe says, and it's similarly by us, people never go barefoot, even in the summertime, people go with socks. So therefore, your feet are considered a part of your body that's always covered. And the same thing would be if a person is changing his clothes or his socks in the middle of the day or the middle of the night. The exception is where he's in the bathhouse. There, it's normal to be undressed, or for that matter, when a person is taking a bath or a shower at home, it can't be otherwise. So therefore, of necessity, then he gets undressed, and it's not considered pritzistik. So there, what you have is Alter Rebbe describes if a person is, let's say, bathing in a river, then he should get dressed or undressed as close as possible to the river so he doesn't have to walk around undressed more than necessary. Now you have in that connection a din. If a person is going to the bathhouse or to a river or something like that, he does not need to cover his erva when he goes down to the river. And in fact, if he does, the Gemara mentions that's a bad thing because then it looks like he's embarrassed of his bris milah. So when he's going down to the river and he's facing away from people, don't cover it. Let it be uncovered. When he's coming out, then he can bend over or put his hand near there, not touching it, because later on the Alter Rebbe talks about you're not supposed to touch that area, but at least to cover it. And the same thing when he's going to the mikveh or the bathhouse or whatever, if he's able to cover it with a washcloth or whatever, so much the better.
Has to get undressed and dressed in the bathroom then.
So if a person is getting undressed or dressed in the bathroom, then maybe that's, I mean, a bathroom is a normal, but that's the thing. We're saying even in a bathroom, a person is not supposed to uncover more of his body than necessary when he's urinating or defecating. So by the same, I don't know that getting dressed in the bathroom would be any better in that regard, according to what the Alter Rebbe is saying over here. If he's undressing in the bathroom to take a shower, of course, that's different, but yeah.
You could want to get a dress or a blanket face.
I guess it would, yeah. You get used to it after a while, I guess.